Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening from. This is Poya. I just want to thank you once again for joining us and tuning in to Uncharted and Eclectic, as well as thank our sponsor, Oracle NetSuite, for helping us bring these great episodes to you. If you want to check them out, you can learn more about what NetSuite does at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale. So check them out. We've used them in the past. They're a great company. So go take a peek at netsuite.com/scale. Thanks so much.
Back to another episode of Uncharted and Eclectic. We are doing another lightning round by popular demand. So the format, for those who haven't listened yet, is we bring on, in this case, it'll be Poya and I, we'll cover one topic and we'll cover it relatively quickly, and that'll be it. And we've gotten some really good feedback on these lightning rounds just to cover some of the more kind of like burning questions in startups and SaaS and in sales. And this week's question, Poya, is what do you look for in candidates? And I guess to be more specific, what do you look for in sales candidates for early stage sales roles? You've hired quite a few people and a lot of those people have had a lot of success in their careers. Tell us about maybe what's like the number one thing you look for.
Yeah, I think context is important, right? For different stages, different companies. I think all of those things need to be considered. But if we're generalizing, and I'm assuming here that it's an early stage company that you're working for, or just in general, one of the things I really look for is, does the candidate have a chip on their shoulders, right? Have they been through a failure? Like, what's their why? Like, personal why, not the why for joining your company. Like, what drives them day after day, right? So, and the reason is, maybe it's biased, but my why is because my parents escaped Iran for a better life for me and my siblings. So I've always had this chip on my shoulder to make them proud and kind of pay it forward and give back. And every candidate I've kind of evaluated from that angle and kind of assessed them and made sure like they come from a hardship background, have never, ever, ever like been a regret. And specifically, I'll call out Wana. Wana is, he's a director of sales now at a company called Scratchpad. He was at PersistIQ, same founders for a couple of years. I hired him at HackerRank, and he not only came really prepared to the interview, but we resonated that he's like, hey, the last 10 years I've had to leave Burma and everything to come get educated here. And I still support my family and my parents and my father and my mother back home, right? So that kind of, I think, chip on your shoulders, like that why, that passion, whatever you want to call it, that's personal, I think is something that if you can assess for and make sure that the candidate has, you won't ever regret it. So that's one actionable
thing. That's a great one. And I can vouch for the Wana example. He is awesome. What's maybe a question? If I'm a sales leader listening to this call, or a CEO thinking about making my first sales hire, what's maybe, without having like a personal relationship and knowing their background, what's like a question you like to ask to probe around chip on the shoulder?
Yeah, it depends where the candidate is. If they're early on in their career where they don't have that much experience, I actually really love to find out like where they grew up. Like, what were their parents? Did you have to work? Did you have a college job? Did you have to pay for college? Did you support yourself in any way? You know, because that, I think, kind of work ethic is really, really tough to replace. So early on, those are the kind of questions I'd love to ask, especially if they don't have work experience. If they do have work experience, I'd love to find out like, what was their prior success? Was it because of their hard work? If they weren't successful, why? Are they blaming somebody else, or are they taking ownership? And the example I'll give, right now we're interviewing people for Saster, and we interviewed this recent candidate that was doing event sponsorship. And he's like, look, I could have set back or quit when events went to zero, right, in March, April, but I worked with the team to come up with different things, and we weren't making the revenue we were before, but at least we came up with like new revenue streams, right? And that kind of like, whatever we're gonna call it, persistent grit, ability to work with teammates to kind of overcome an obstacle, I think is one of the best ways. So it depends if they have experience or not, but those are some of the questions I like to ask.
Okay, cool. I can add one too. So the thing that I've seen as a pretty consistent pattern with the very best salespeople I've worked with for startups. And like the consistent pattern is they're typically owners. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, when you're going through the journey early in an early stage startup, it's not for the AE, they're going to be asked to do more than close deals. There's going to be some like foundational work that has to be built again and again as you're iterating around your sales process that isn't going to be money in my bank account. And you know, there's kind of this notion that salespeople are coin operated. I think to some degree that's true. And I think to some degree it's actually somewhat important because of the way the incentives are set up, where half or more of your compensation is based on performance. But at a startup, it doesn't necessarily work that way because of all the work that you're asked to do that isn't necessarily closing revenue, but it's indirectly contributing. And like the example I like to use is, you know, if you hire somebody from, you know, Salesforce, for example, that person's probably got a ton of amazing exposure. But the skill set that they've had and what they've been asked to do is step into a machine and perform within the machine. But they've got the power of the brand behind them. When you step into a startup, you don't have that. You don't have the power of a brand behind you. You have to be scrappy. And I think that the type of person who tends to be successful in that environment is somebody who thinks like an owner. And the way that I like to, I guess, probe for that is I'll ask the question, tell me about the thing that you're, you know, most proud of in your career, and just kind of listen and hear what people have to say. And typically you can kind of parse apart if somebody's telling a story about something that they directly built or were a part of building, that's typically a good sign. That means that they kind of have an ownership mindset.
Yeah. The only caveat I'll add to that is I actually love hiring people at a Salesforce, Oracle, those big companies 2-3 years after college, because usually what happens is they go in, they get trained on the fundamentals like I did. And there's a lot of really good talented people like Frank and Spencer that were at the same time, like we got trained at Oracle and they're now like leading sales at some of the best companies, Spencer specifically at AirKit, Frank did it at Beyond Pricing. But I think learning the fundamentals of like, whether it's Sandler training, whatever it is, like some frameworks do make a difference. And I think sometimes when you graduate right out of college, unless you can do it on your own, which I think is really, really tough to do, it does help to get your kind of foundation at a company like Salesforce or ADP or whatever, where they have like a very structured process and you do it with groups. But outside of that, you nailed it. And my third one, which kind of goes hand to hand, it's that ownership mentality is, all around, whether you want to call it like an all around rep or whatever, like somebody that can do sales, they can do CS, they can almost in the early days act like a product manager, right? Especially if you're like lean and you don't have enough resources. I do think having somebody that's not, like specifically good at one or two things and they can do all of those things and be a generalist and be more of an account manager to the customer and get them successful and document. And they're a very, very, very tough hire to make. They're almost like a unicorn hire. But if they have some of the right characteristics that you're looking for, that makes someone successful, like do they have grit? Do they have hard work? Do they have a chip on their shoulders? And you can get them an advisor. In no time, they'll be better than an experienced candidate. So that would be my next tip.
Nice. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the other thing that I've noticed outside of ownership as a pretty consistent pattern of folks that are really successful in an early stage environment is, you know, it sales is this balance of art and science where there's a numbers game that you have to play in order to be successful. You need like a certain amount of pipeline to close the amount of business you need to close, and you're tinkering like a scientist. And I think that is a more valuable skill set the bigger and more established and more predictable a company becomes. And in the early days, the art piece of it, I think, is maybe even a little bit underrated, where the creativity it takes to be successful and the ability to like adjust on a fly and just like let your assumptions go. It's a hard thing to necessarily identify in an interview process, but I would say creativity is one of the things that I've seen is just a consistent pattern in terms of people who've had success early on. And, you know, that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. You know, one might be that you start to notice a pattern of certain types of customers that are a really good fit for your product that you didn't really plan for or you know, consider in the beginning, and you can go rally resources internally to, you know, exploit that opportunity. The ability to do that takes a lot of creativity. So I would say creativity would be the second one I contribute.
How do you assess for that in the interview process?
Yeah, I actually think that same question I asked earlier about, you know, tell me about the thing you're most proud of in your career. You can typically tell if it's something where somebody took ownership and put their own creative spin on it. They kind of actually go hand in hand a little bit. I like to also talk about, just ask people about situations where there's been a lot of ambiguity. Like, tell me about when you were in an environment where you didn't have much clarity around how you needed to do something. All you needed to do was create some sort of an outcome. Like, tell me about how you approached that. Tell me about how you like gathered the resources internally. Tell me about what you learned along the way, like asking people how they learn as well. Those are kind of walking me through a process where you like step into a dark room and you have to figure out how to turn on the lights. That's kind of how I like to approach it. What about you? How would you approach the creativity question, Poi? And I ask you that because you're somebody who's very creative. So I would wonder how you'd ask that.
I think I would love to, especially if it's a sales role and they've done it in the past, right? Like, talk me through a time that you had to do your own prospecting. Like, how did you get the attention in this busy, crowded world of the buyer? Like, what did you do?
Sure.
Whatever it may be, right? And just shut up and listen and see what they come up with. And the reason I like that question is, one, I want to know how they are on the fly, right? Because I think it's helpful. But two, it shows if they can't come up with that many like examples, do I really want this person on my team? Where in the early days, you got to kind of go above and beyond, right? Even you got to make that next call, you got to send that next email, you got to put in that work time after time. I started it, and you can go next, or we can go with the fifth.
You bring
one
us up. Let's, if you could do number five, that'd be great.
Okay. Number five for me is, some people call it empathy. I call it kindness, whatever you want to call it. I think in the early days, it's like I bucket all of it in one empathy, kindness. I think it's so, so important to really, really emotionally understand where the other person's coming from, right? Whether they're a jerk or not, whether it's the founder going through crazy crap, like I've had to work for some really, really tough people. And I've always, from like a founder's perspective, I'm like, I can't even imagine what that person's going through, because it's their business, right? It's almost like their baby, right? But also from a customer's perspective, right? When there's issues or hiccups, even though I'm in sales, like I feel for the customer and I'm like, wow, I can only imagine how frustrating or disappointing that is, right? And I think that sort of empathy and kindness is really, really important. And then the last one I'll give, which is the bonus round, is, which I think it's almost impossible, honestly, to like know truly if the person has it or not, but is curiosity. Like how many questions did they ask? Like, did they go a level deeper? Are they actually interested in what I have to say, or is it like robotic? And last but not least, it's going to drive people crazy when I say this, because I just keep going, is there's this gut feeling sometimes I have, and this is from like a candidate's perspective, usually not from a hiring manager's perspective. Like, if it feels right, I want to join that company and that founder and that startup and like help them out, whether it's as a full-time consulting capacity, whatever it is. But sometimes that gut feeling, like that feeling, like, does this feel right? I think anytime I've not listened to that, I ended up regretting my decision. So those are the big ones. What do you think?
I like it. Yeah. You gave three at the end there, but
I gave three.
it doesn't boil down to just one or two things. And I think you're right about that intellectual curiosity piece. And I'm glad that you're able to provide some like kind of specific examples too, just on what questions that folks can ask as they're thinking about building out their, building out their criteria. You got to trust the gut to some degree in the end, but you have to kind of follow a process along the way and measure for specific things just to make sure that you're being fair and not too biased and you're following your process. So, Poi, listen, I appreciate the three. I'm glad I could contribute two, and hopefully the folks listening to this were able to get some value out of what to look for in an early stage sales hire.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know if you're listening, what you thought, whether it's reaching out to Robbie, myself, what we can improve. And in the meantime, be safe, be well, and happy holidays, everybody. This week's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite.
Oracle NetSuite, I think, solves a really important problem that a lot of startups, business owners, executives face, which is how do you get the information that you need instantly all in one place? Before we upgraded to Oracle NetSuite at my last startup, it used to take us a lot of time to pull the information reports that we needed for our quarterly investment meeting, or the report that we wanted to send to both internal employees as well as stakeholders and shareholders at the end of the month. Upgrade to Oracle NetSuite today so you can get the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, and everything you need in one place that you can access instantly. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale.